Rajika Charasat Hare Sadashi Shimitvani Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Sri Prabhupada Kijai, Iskan Foundry Charya, Sri Prabhupada Kijai, Samavita Rindu Kijai, Lord Premananda. All glories to Simha devotees, all glories to Simha devotees, all glories to Simha devotees, all glories to Sri Guru Granth. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya, Krishna Sandhya, Shimati Bhaktivedanta Swami, Namaste. Namaste Sansade, Gaura Vanda Vishnu, Vishnu, Shri Guru Granth. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 5, Narada's Teachings to Vasudeva. Text 16. Yetai Valyama Samprapta. Yetai Valyama Samprapta. Yetai Tashchamudhatam. Atmanam gatayantite. Yekai valyama samprapta. Yechati tascha mudhatam. Prevargika yakshanika. Atmanam gatayantite. Ye kaivalyam samprapta. Ye chati tascha mudhatam. Vaivargika yakshanika. Atmanam gatayantite. Yea, those who, kaivalyam, knowledge of the absolute truth, asamprapta, have not achieved. Yea, who, cha, also, atita, have transcended, cha, also, mudhatam, gross foolishness. Trivargika, dedicated to the three goals of highest life, namely dharma, religiosity, artha, economic development, and kama, sense gratification. He, indeed, akshanika, not having even a moment to reflect, Atmanam, their own selves, Gatayanti, murder, Te, they. Translation purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. those who have not achieved knowledge of the absolute truth, yet who are still beyond the darkness of complete ignorance, generally follow the threefold path of pious material life, namely religiosity, economic development, and sense gratification. Not having time to reflect on any higher purpose, they become the killers of their own soul. Fourth, those who are completely in the darkness of ignorance and thus bereft even of material pious life commit innumerable sinful activities and suffer greatly. Due to such intense suffering, such persons sometimes seek the shelter of the devotees of the Lord, and being blessed by such transcendental association, are sometimes elevated to the highest perfectional stage of Krishna consciousness. Those who are not completely sinful experience some mitigation of the miseries of material life, and thus develop a false sense of well-being within the material world, because those who are materially pious generally obtain worldly prosperity, bodily beauty, and a pleasant family situation. They become falsely proud of their position and are not inclined to associate with or accept instructions from the devotees of the Lord. Unfortunately, all material activities, whether pious or impious, are inevitably contaminated by sinful activity. Those who are proud of their piety and do not like to hear about Krishna sooner or later fall down from their artificial position. Every living entity is an eternal servant of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, until we surrender to Krishna, our position is actually always impious. The word akshanika, not having even a moment to reflect, is significant in this verse. Materialistic persons cannot spare a single moment for their eternal self-interest. This is the symptom of misfortune. Such persons are considered to be killing their own souls because of their obstinacy. They are preparing a dark future for themselves from which they will not escape for a very long time. A sick man receiving medical treatment may be encouraged by the preliminary results of the doctor's care. But if the patient becomes falsely proud of the preliminary progress in his treatment and prematurely gives up the doctor's orders, thinking himself already cured, there will undoubtedly be a relapse. The word Jye Kaivalyam Asampraptha in this verse clearly indicate that material piety is a long way from perfect knowledge of the absolute truth. If one gives up his spiritual progress before achieving the lotus feet of Krishna, he will undoubtedly fall back down into the most unpleasant material situation, even if he has achieved impersonal realization of Brahman effulgence. They state in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Ahruya Krishna Parampadam Tatakpatantyada. Om Gyanatam Randishan Janandjana Salakaya Chakshayam Amina Kasma Shri Guru Vemanaya Panchakopa Chudishchak Tikasimdevichak Patikana Bhavana Vyo Vaishnavi. So this last paragraph reminded me of a story or a situation happened to me. We had this group of devotees that I was facilitating every week in Chicago. This was quite a while ago, 10 or 12 years ago. And there was one devotee, a bhakta, who'd been around for a while. And he was in the group and he was making nice progress in many things. He had some mental issues. He had bipolar disorder. That he was on medication and through the group and association of devotees. He was really doing quite well. He was a very nice young man. He disappeared for a while, and I later found out where he was. And so a month or two later, my next visit to him was in the psych ward in a Chicago hospital. And he had gone off his medication. He stopped taking his medicine because he felt he was doing very well. But unfortunately, his mental illness affected him. He tried to commit suicide and ended up in the institution. So this is what's being discussed here. It's another example where it's been discussed that if one thinks one is doing well and then gives up the medication, then one will fall down again, not having completed the progress in that area. So this is, of course, analogous to material life, and that one must be very careful, and because there's a danger in pride in material life. We may be doing well in what we call the four purusharthas here primarily. This is being discussed, and we've had this discussion for several verses, that one who tries to progress in terms of artha, kama, dharma, and moksha will ultimately not succeed through economic development, through sense gratification, and even through religiosity. Moksha is not mentioned here. I guess I haven't got to that point. One may achieve many things materially, but there's every possibility of falling down, and there's every possibility of not completing one's spiritual process. And of course, it's even more strongly stated because those people do not take shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna. Do not really take up the process of Krishna consciousness. So that danger in advanced materialism or religiosity is mentioned in the last verse of his purport. The Srimad Bhagavatam is quoted 10.2.32, which is, although non-devotees who accept severe austerities and penances to achieve the highest position may think themselves liberated, their intelligence is impure. They fall down from their position of imagined superiority because they have no regard for your lotus feet. So again, those who may be even materially pious and make some progress in material life and have some good karmic reaction and be in a good position and even have some religious sentiment, if they don't take shelter of Krishna's lotus feet, then it says their intelligence is impure. And then further, of course, even more strongly in this verse is this idea of the killer of the soul. Was I supposed to read the next verse too? Okay. Since that leads right to it, the next verse discusses the killer of the soul. I forgot to read that one. Text 17, the killers of the soul are never peaceful because they consider that human intelligence is ultimately meant for expanding material life. Thus, neglecting their real spiritual duties, they are always in distress. They are filled with great hopes and dreams, but unfortunately, they are always destroyed by the inevitable march of time. Here, short purport. There's a similar verse in the Sri Upanishad. Asurya namate loka adena tamasprata angste precha vigajanti yeke chatma hanojana. The killer of the soul, whoever he may be, must enter into the planets known as the worlds of the faithless, full of darkness and ignorance. So this fate is, of course, there for the materialist, very vividly described, called the killer of the soul, because one is not really interested in one's spiritual welfare and spiritual advancement. Now, we've discussed this for several verses now throughout this fifth chapter of the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam, and we have a very strong repeated message of how dangerous the path of materialism, particularly even material piety, can be, because it doesn't lead directly to devotional service to the Lord. But I was thinking that in a very similar way, that we need to be careful and not become complacent or proud in the process of sadhana bhakti. So even one who has taken the devotional service, it does not mean that therefore we are in the superior position, we have nothing to worry about, there's no danger, no problems, and we can be very complacent and satisfied, and that, well, I'm a devotee now, none of this applies. The difficulty is that everybody is carrying anarthas into this life. Anarthas are defined as unwanted desires. And whether one is a devotee or not a devotee, through one's past activities and past karma, those anarthas are there within the heart. Now, of course, the process of Krishna consciousness is largely the process of sadhana bhakti, one of alleviating or eradicating those anarthas and developing a love of God. I wanted to talk a little bit today about anarthas, about that process, and how we also have to be careful that we do not become proud, and that we do, and that we make sure that our progress in Krishna consciousness is going on in the best way possible. So, much of what I'm going to be talking about and reading today comes from Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's Madhurya Kandambani. Much of this is also discussed in Nectar Devotion, Bhakti Sanita Sindhu. But Vishnu tells us that there's four types of anarthas. So when we come into this world, we have so many unwanted desires, we have so many material attachments, and the four kinds are diskritota, which are anarthas coming from our sinful activities, Sukhatota, Narth is coming from pious deeds. So even if one has pious deeds, there's still some unwanted desires there. And those are described as, it says, Sukhotama and Narthas are part of the five causes of distress. Here are the five causes of distress, why we're suffering this material world. Envy, pride, anger, ignorance, and attachment. So you can see, just as we've been describing in these verses from the Bhagavatam, that even if one is has pious deeds, which are the people that are being discussed here, there still can be those anarthas of pride, envy, and attachment. Those types of things can be there, whether one is performing pious or impious activities. Then there's aparadotma, anarthas coming from offenses, which we know quite a bit about, and that's described also quite a bit in the Nectar Devotion. And then there's bhaktyuta, anarthas coming from devotional service. Now, Vishnu does not really describe this very much in the Durya Kadambini, so I don't have a lot of information on those anarthas coming from devotional service, but I was thinking about last week during class, we were talking about the idea of pride. And we see that one can, even great devotees like Lord Brahma or Lord Indra became proud of their service or proud of their position, and therefore they had some fall down or they had to be corrected by Krishna. So this would be an example of an anartha that may come about through one's devotional service. One becomes falsely proud or puffed up due to that position. So, of course, the process of anartha nivritti is the process of cessation, or trying to eradicate those anarthas. And Vishnu says there's five stages to the cessation of the anarthas, from partial to complete. Don't want to get into too much detail here, but in other words, there's different degrees that those anarthas are gradually eradicated through the stages of devotional service, through the process of sadhana bhakti. As we go from bhajana kriya, particularly through bhajana kriya and through the anartha nivritti stage and the anishta stage, many of these anarthas are destroyed, but there's not total complete, really annihilation, you could say, of all anarthas in the heart until one is very advanced in stages of bhava and prema. But still, most of those anarthas will be gradually disappearing as we advance through sadhana bhakti. And those anarthas that are destroyed through sadhana bhakti, Vishnu says the most important process, of course, is the chanting of the holy name. So it's through repeated chanting that all of those troublesome things within the heart become destroyed almost nil. And he says, although chanting is the remedy for curing sevaparad, it's actually the remedy for offenses committed in performing all parts of devotional service. So basically, whatever our difficulties are, whatever offenses we may have created, whatever aparads are in the heart, we have a very, very simple formula. Continue to chant Hare Krishna, and of course, trying to avoid the 10 offenses while we do so. And then the process works gradually as we go along. So when the anarthas are mostly gone, we finally reach the stage of nishta, or naishtika bhakta. So this is a process, this is the platform of steadiness. When one is steady in one's devotional service, not so much disturbed by all of these unwanted material desires. Not completely pure, of course, but still in a very steady position of Krishna consciousness. Now, to come through that stage of anartha nivritti and reach the stage of nishta, there's five impediments, Vishwanath tells us. I thought these were kind of interesting because sometimes you see these different lists. There's five lists and six of that and these stages and all of these Sanskrit terms, and they seem very technical. But these struck me, that these five impediments that undermine the process of anartha nivritti seemed very familiar. I think you will recognize some of these as they apply to us in our lives. So those five impediments are laya, are loya, vikshepa, apratipati, kashaya, and rasavada. All right, those don't sound so familiar, but as we read these, loya is the weakness of being more soporific during hearing about the Lord than while chanting his holy names, and more soporific while remembering Lord Hari than during hearing about him. So what does soporific mean? What? Oh, soporific? It's basically falling asleep. I mean, That's how I've always understood the word soporific, and I looked it up in several dictionaries online. They all said, yeah, it means sleeping, a sleep state. In other words, falling asleep while we're hearing and chanting. So I think that's something that it has happened to me on occasion. It may have happened to others. You know, sometimes the fact that you're having difficulty going to sleep is in an old joke, pick up a Srimad Bhagavatam, and you know, usually because of our general inattentiveness and not so much taste yet. Well, often difficult philosophical concepts sometimes will cause us to become a little drowsy. So that's one of the difficulties. Falling asleep while we're or sleepiness, or drowsiness while we're hearing and chanting. The next one is vikshepa. Talking or thinking about mundane nonsense during devotional activities such as hearing and chanting. Now, I've never seen that amongst devotees, you know, especially, you know, during the japa period and like that. You know, there's a word we used to use a lot. Remember the word for jalpa? I don't hear that much anymore, do we? Is that, but, you know, we used to always hear that. But don't talk for jalpa, don't talk nonsense. So, yeah, basically that's another one of our obstacles in clearing the anarthas within us. Then there's apratipati is when both loya and vikshepa are absent, but at times one still feels incapable of or disinterested in hearing and chanting and so on. In other words, just sort of lack of commitment, lack of determination, just, you know, sort of a laziness or a lethargy about taking up the process of hearing and chanting. Then there's kshaya, is the tendency to display such faults as anger, greed, and arrogance during devotional activities. I think this is something we're all pretty familiar with. We try to comport ourselves well while we're in the temple performing devotional activities, but this is an impediment, a problem, if we're feeling these types of things. And then rasavada means the mind is so attached to sense pleasure, often meditating on it, is unable to hear and chant with concentration. So in other words, material desires affecting the mind so that we can't concentrate on our hearing and chanting. So all these problems are there for living entity. As I said, I think we've all experienced some of these, at least sometimes, to some degree. There's something that we do struggle with. And I was thinking also that, wasn't Bhaktivinoda Thakur who said that of all of the 10 offenses, that inattentive chanting is the root cause of the other 10? Is that correct? You heard that, right? And Harinam Chintamani. So I was thinking this kind of confirms this. This is a similar idea of, you know, sleepiness, inattentiveness, unable to really focus. It's all that inattention. It's all that sort of broad category of, you know, the other offense after we say the 10 offenses. It's also 10. Also offense to be inattentive while chanting. So this is problematic for us as devotees, that we do have trouble sometimes focusing nicely on our Bhajana Kriya, the hearing and chanting. So Vishnu says, once the anarthas are removed, then these five obstacles are almost abolished and devotion becomes firm and undeviating. Therefore, it can be said that the absence of the five impediments in the heart are the symptoms of nishtika bhakti. So we need to work through these things and work through these anarthas to reach the stage of steadiness of nishtha. So Vishnu says, with the removal of these obstacles, the devotee makes progress toward nishtha or steady devotion. When nishtha bhakti blossoms in the devotee's consciousness, the immediate effect is when it's no longer ruled by anger, greed, or other influences, the modes of passion, ignorance. And of course, there's another nice verse from the Bhagavatam that confirms this, 1:2:19, Adha Rajastamo Bhava Kamalo Bhavata Yastriye, Chete Tire Anavita, Stita Sakta Vasidati. As soon as irrevocable loving service is established in the heart, the effects of nature's modes of passion, ignorance, such as lust, desire, and hankering, disappear from the heart. Then the devotee is established in goodness and he becomes completely happy. So simultaneously, almost as one's Krishna consciousness is developing, these other desires are subsiding. But at the same time, we need to get rid of these other issues and problems to help our Krishna consciousness develop. So of course, which comes first? That's always the problem, because we have to be simultaneously ridding ourselves of anarthas. But how do we rid ourselves of anarthas? Through the process of chanting Hare Krishna. So, this is what sadhana is. We have to patiently But with dedication and the consistency, hear and chant Krishna while this process is working to cleanse the heart. There's another interesting idea about the stage of nishtha and achieving nishtha in the Madhurya Kumbhini, which I hadn't really seen exactly like this in other places, so it kind of struck me. As Vishnu says that nishtha, fixed faith, has two varieties. One is called sakshat bhakti vishayini, which is nourishing spontaneous bhakti, and the second is vastu vishayini, or fostering of complementary bhakti qualities. So one is the steadiness, the fixed devotional service, and the other is developing those devotional qualities, so those qualities of devotee that we see. And the steadiness takes place in the body, the mind, and the words. But Vishnu says these are sometimes at different rates. It's not always the same. So he says somebody may be very fixed in their mind, but they don't seem to be very active in devotional service, or vice versa, or one may be becoming very fixed mentally and is very doing much service, but their words may not always be under control so well. So in other words, these things happen and they become purified, but not always at the same rate. And then he explains that the development of good qualities in the devotee, the one half of nishtha, and becoming fixed in devotional service don't always proceed together. And this is something I've always noted over the years, but never really had any scriptural backing or, no place from our acharyas to really confirm this. So I found this interesting. As Vishnu says, furthermore, qualities such as humility, which specifically means renouncing respect given to the self by others, but still offering respect to others, friendliness and compassion, are conducive to a culture of devotional service. Sometimes it appears that certain devotees who are self-controlled and equipoised possess these qualities, although they lack bhakti nishtha, or unwavering faith in devotional service. Conversely, in other cases, an arrogant and therefore disrespectful devotee does not seem to be decorated with these good qualities, although he does in fact possess bhakti nishtha. So there you have, sometimes, and some of us may have noted that over the years that, some devotees may be very firm in their faith and very strict in their Krishna consciousness, but still may have a few rough edges. And others may be very, very nice devotees with very wonderful, sweet qualities, but may have difficulty in being steady in their Krishna consciousness. So in other words, both are developing, but they don't necessarily develop at the same rate. So obviously what's important is one's steadiness in devotional service. Vishnu says, in fact, the presence of these qualities clearly indicates, that means the good qualities, undeviating faith and bhakti, and the absence of these qualities, such as friendliness and compassion, means lack of faith in the process of bhakti. But the essential yardstick for measuring perfectly the depth of nishtika bhakti, or the lack of it, and the anishtika bhakti, is whether hearing and chanting has intensified or is stagnating. An increase in hearing and chanting indicates a rise in nishtha bhakti. So, kind of an interesting point as we struggle sometimes or proceed nicely through the process of sadhana bhakti, that there are struggles along the way, and it's not always an even road. And we are trying to clear those impurities within the heart through the process of hearing and chanting. And sometimes good qualities will develop, sometimes not so much, but we persist. So the essential point is that through the early stages of bhakti, we are trying to increase our attraction, and we are increasing our attraction to Krishna, and simultaneously decreasing material desire, which is, of course, anartha nivritti. We're trying to rid ourselves of those unwanted habits, those material desires that are there from the past. So it's described how these two processes are going on through the analogy of the devotional creeper. The devotional creeper has two fresh leaves that represent the stage of sadhana bhakti. The first leaf is called kleshagni, which is the destroyer of distress, and the second leaf is shubhadha, the bestower of good fortune. So of the six symptoms of pure devotional service, they're mentioned in the next devotion. These first two are there at the stage of sadhana. The other, the second, the third, and the fourth are the stage of bhava, and the fifth and sixth are the stage of prema. So focusing, I guess, more on my stage of the stage of sadhana, we see that immediately, in the very beginning, process of sadhana bhakti is kleshagna, kleshagni, and subhadha, they arise. So, destroyer of distresses, process of nartanavritti is beginning, the suffering of the material world that we've experienced begins to decrease, we feel the lessening of that grip on us, we become more and more free from material modes of nature, and the subsequent distress and pain that we experience through those modes of nature. And at the same time, the subhadha bestower of good fortune means that we are simultaneously developing an attraction for Krishna. Because that is what is good fortune really is. It's described. It means that we are beginning to experience our relationship with Krishna, develop some attraction for Krishna, and revive and begin that revival of our relationship with Krishna. So both need to go together, and this is what the process of sadhana bhakti does. Simultaneous becoming detached from material and attracted to Krishna. Okay. I'll stop at that point if there's any discussion or questions.
Sometimes we see that very advanced devotee becomes very, very distressed in their life later on. I mean, or I don't know if I should say advanced, or I should say seemingly advanced, but then you know, they're afflicted with so much disasters and so forth.
So you say they become distressed?
Or they become, you know, afflicted with so many setbacks.
Okay.
How can you explain?
Well, I think there's two things. One is if you're talking about falling down, and the other is experiencing distress. Because experiencing distress can be a very natural part of one's devotional journey. And in fact, we see so many great devotees, pure devotees, who are put into distress. And Krishna sometimes puts us in positions of distress and suffering for our own advancement and for our own learning, so that we can learn some lesson or simply to surrender to him, to take shelter of Krishna. In the case of seemingly advanced devotee falling down, we can understand that they may have made some genuine advancement, but they are still afflicted by these anartas, still afflicted by material desires. It's described that all of the anartas are not completely eradicated to the stage of prema. And we actually have a very vivid example in the Bhagavatam of Maharaj Bharata, right? Who became attracted to the deer. Now, very, very slight, tiny anarta, but Prabhupada described that he was at the stage of bhava. So even at the stage of bhava, there was some little attachment was there. So it can be there for the living entity all the way up to the stage of pure devotional service, to the stage of perfection. Of course, we see that generally for a very advanced devotee, Krishna does protect them. Right? Krishna gives that protection to his devotees, and he, even the stage of Bharata Maharaj, we can see that he had a plan for him. And he took his life as a deer, then took his life as Jetabharata, and of course preached to Maharaj Rahugana, and so there was a good result for him. So this is, I think that we can see that even if a devotee does experience some difficulty, as Krishna says, there's no loss or diminution, you know, that any little advancement on this path protects them from the dangerous types, most dangerous kind of fear. So the devotee will always keep that advancement. That was another example that was given between the difference between pious activity and spiritual activity, so the difference between this mundane piety and sukriti, or spiritual advancement. Because mundane pious activity or impious activity, one suffers or gains the loss of that, and it's temporary. You know, one goes up, one comes down, goes to heavenly planets, comes down, whatever. But devotional service, bhakti, is never lost. That's permanent. So whatever advancement that is established in bhakti is there eternally for the spirit's soul. You know, and yeah, we can see that even devotees who reach some level of advancement, you know, they're still not at the perfected stage, and there can be some pull down. There's always that danger.
Describing these different faults, five different faults that one may be experiencing during, perhaps during chanting.
These impediments, yeah.
So it would seem in my thinking that those impediments may also appear at other times, not simply at chanting.
It mentions hearing, chanting, and remembering also.
But like in the course of the day, I mean, one may perform some sadhana, and then in the course of the day, goes off and does what Prabhupada says, any damn thing. So it seems to be, you know, a wider scope could be applied.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, in fact, it's talking about hearing, chanting, and so on. And one, it says in display during devotional activities. So yeah, it's certainly wider than just chanting. Mm-hmm.
I was thinking, what I remember from Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur Madhurya Kadambini commentary that the fourth category of anartha nivritti stage, that the offense while performing bhakti, how is that some anartha still there? So he explained that while someone is advancing, then the prestige, the other devotee respects him, and the fame, name, money, yeah. Like we can see in Prabhupada's case, so much everything came. But sometimes it's more risky for them. So how they handle, and most of the time they may fall for those, oh, he didn't pay obeisances. So those things are considered that anartha still lingering until, as you said, Bhagavan.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And those are some of the, I was talking about this in another class last week or two ago, that, you know, through advancement in bhakti and devotional service, these other things may arise, and pride. And Vishnu mentions in his part, he talks about pride, opulence, these types of faults may come about.
Adoration, distinction.
Prophet adoration, distinction is another way to Prabhupada mention it. Yeah, that those things can be there for the devotee. And as I mentioned before, even the Nectar Devotion mentions that one who has many disciples must be careful not to be proud of that and can fall down. So one has many disciples, we're talking about someone who's fairly advanced in Krishna consciousness, the point where they're a spiritual master even, or taking disciples. So, yeah, those dangers, those anarthas are always there, even at a very higher stages of Krishna consciousness. So I guess all living entities get some benefit by attending the Srimad Bhagavatam class. Anything on the lady's side? Okay. Janmashtami?
Very good class, people. The one thing that kind of concerns me, you know, what goes on in our movement now. There's in the verse Bhagavad Gita 9:30, Apichet Sudaracharo, Krishna enjoins that even if someone commits the most abominable act, he should be considered saintly. And that in the succeeding verses that he'll eventually overcome all this and achieve lasting peace. You know, we live in internet age, you know, and if someone makes a mistake, it's really difficult for him to, to kind of process it in kind of a normal way because there's such a huge negative wave of public opinion that comes his way. I recall there was a pastime with Prabhupada. I'm not sure I can remember the name of the devotee, but he had the fall down, and there were some devotees that were on Prabhupada's traveling team, you know, I think maybe a secretary or whatever, And he told a few people. And Prabhupada became furious that now he said, now you've ruined his chances for coming back. But yet we have this like phenomena, you know, there's a fall down, then it just becomes poof all over the world.
Yeah.
And it seems that sometimes it's a little, maybe it should be a little bit more controlled, you know, in terms of there'd be maybe a more thorough discussion going on with the person that's had the problem before it goes
well, of course,
viral,
but,
as they
of
say.
Of course, but we say it should be more controlled. Who's going to control it? I remember when I was on the executive committee of GBC a few years ago, you know, we had to deal sometimes with fairly high-profile devotees with fall-downs. And, you know, we would always try to deal with it very carefully, very confidentially, try to rectify it, you know, try to keep it in-house. And, you know, you never really could because of the Internet. And then if you tried to, then you were accused of covering up. Said, oh, yeah, you know, it's a Good Old Boys Network. You're just trying to protect. Well, no, we weren't really trying to protect them. We were trying to deal with it in a sensitive way. It's not like, you know, a person was going to stay in a position, but we were going to try to deal, you know, so they could, you know, have a little bit of dignity left, you know, in their life, not be completely smeared. But, you know, it's a problem. I don't know what to say. It's very difficult. I think we're all aware of it.
It's like a real strong instruction that Krishna's given, and somehow collectively we haven't done so well.
Yeah. And at the same time, I guess I always want to mention the other side of 9:30, and that's Prabhupada talking that this is an accidental fall down, not that one continually. And he said, you know, obviously, you know, sin no more. In other words, not that one should continue and one is rightly situated and saintly if one recovers his position, not that one continues those activities, but if one recovers from that position, resumes their position of devotional service, in other words, following, then they should not be, you know, considered as abominable, but considered saintly. So if we read the purports of those two verses carefully, you know, and there's a balance there as well. Not just anyone can do anything, oh, well, they're devotee, no problem. You know, because we had that extreme too. In the past, sometimes we had the other extreme where, especially leaders are like, you know, they could get away with anything. Or, you know, and that verse was off. I don't want to get on a soapbox here, but in my years as being the director of the Child Protection Office, we would have that verse, I would have that verse thrown at me if we tried to correct somebody who is basically committing child sexual abuse. Is that person to be considered saintly? And we should, no, in other words, you know, there has to be some reasonable balance, you know. That's just bringing the other side of that. That's it? One should not take advantage. No one should take advantage of this verse and commit nonsense in thinking he's still a devotee. He does not approve his character by devotional service, and it's to be understood he's a devotee. Okay. There it is. That was what I meant in the purport, the balance. So both things are there. But the first point is also completely legitimate. It's not our business to publicize, you know, or broadcast, you know, the downfall of other devotees or the shortcomings of other devotees. I mean, that's the type of offense in itself. So, again, we need to use a little intelligence here. Michelle.
So, you mentioned
in hearing and chanting, you don't lose that, but in the case of Guru Aparad, I remember reading some time back, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Guru Aparad, that 10 million verse or something.
Well, you know, it's in the sixth canto in the story of Ajamil, in his commentaries, Vishnath Chakravarti talks about that. He talks about the 10 offenses, and he says most of the offenses can be rectified simply by chanting. He says, but two offenses, one will have to suffer if one commits them. And that's committing sinful activity on the strength of chanting and committing Vaishnava Aparad, which is what you mentioned. If one does commit Vaishnava Aparad seriously, as you say, in the Guru Aparad, yes, there will be some reaction. And the devotee might have to experience some distress, as Krishna rectifies him and teaches him and helps him to progress in Krishna consciousness.
I remember Kamal Krishna Maharaj was saying that when Prabhupada made a very heavy strict on one of his disciples who was kind of deviated, he was smoking in India, and Prabhupada said, tell him that if he does not stop, I will reject him. And then the information went to him, and then immediately he got scared and gave up.
Yeah.
And then Kamal Krishna Maharaj confronted the Prabhupada, will you really ever give up any disciple? He said, no, just to rectify you. And then he said something very interesting. He said that if your disciple sincerely prays to you, the Guru will forgive. So it's not like a stuff.
One thing we always have to remember is that Srila Prabhupada, well, we always remember, of course, that Srila Prabhupada was exceptional. You know, he wasn't just an ordinary Vaishnava, an ordinary guru, an ordinary anything. You know, he was Jagat Guru. He was, you know, basically, you know, the savior Lord Chaitanya sent to this Western world. And his position was so exalted that he could deal with everything perfectly according to time and circumstance. You know, he knew the heart of a devotee. He knew who he needed to threaten or be heavy with and who he needed to be very gentle with. Shudhakirti Guru told me that in the 3 years he was with Prabhupada, he said, Prabhupada maybe yelled at him one time. And you can imagine being his servant. You know, Srila Prabhupada wasn't always that patient, you know, with, right, you know, right? In other words, when people were messing things up, he didn't, you know, he wasn't always so tolerant. But Shudhakirti told me, he says, he knew, Prabhupada knew that I was so, he said, I guess, not fragile, that's not the right word, but he knew that I probably couldn't take it if he was very heavy for me. So he said he was always kind and gentle and fatherly with him, because he knew me. And then he would see him with other devotees, you know, yelling at him and everything. They go off smiling. Oh, I got this off. You know, it's like some devotees, it's like they needed it, and they appreciated being chastised. So Prabhupada was expert like that. And, you know, and sometimes we have to be careful that we can't take an isolated incident of how Srila Prabhupada dealt with one devotee and think, oh, that's how we should always deal. You know, because Prabhupada said we couldn't really do that. So, I don't know, I tend to be a little more on, I don't know, we have to have rules, we have to have policies, we have to follow procedures, and we have to deal with devotees in certain ways, because I don't think that we have that unique, you know, like total spiritual vision to, you know, for time and circumstance to know how to deal with every devotee. Of course, we try to do the best we can as Prabhupada would do. And we follow his words, we follow his examples. But we have to be careful, you know, follow, not imitate. Okay. Thank you very much. I'll go to Srila Prabhupada.